She said, "Sam, there's no way that I can get across what I do in 10 minutes. Our competitive edge and our patents that are pending and our team credentials and our exit strategy." I said, "Kathleen, you don't have 10 minutes. You have 60 seconds.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Sam Horn. There's three facts I think you should know about Sam. One, she was the executive director of the Maui Writers Conference for 17 years. And during that time, she helped thousands get the book out of their head and into the world. Two, she's author, among other books, she's the author of Tung Fu, Pop, and Got Your Attention. She's spoken around the world. Her clients include Boeing, Intel, Cisco, and NASA. Perhaps you've heard of them. And finally, the third fact about Sam is that she offers real life stories and actionable insights that so you can communicate with more effectiveness and impact. Sam Horn, welcome. Now, Sam, you have a way, I suppose you could say, you have a way with words that captures attention and helps people remember what is said. Now, when it comes to words, one of the most difficult, and I'm assuming it's difficult because it's usually done so clumsy, is the self-introduction. When we're at a networking event, or, you know, whether it's a live event or these days online, there's still that opportunity to introduce yourself to the group. And the reason you introduce yourself to the group is because there are some people in that setting who don't know you, and so they need to know why you're here in the room, and maybe they also might want to talk to you later about something. So here you've got your moment to give your presentation. So Sam, we're just meeting at an event, we're networking, and I say, "Hi, so what is it you do?"
And you want to know what I say?
Please do.
I turn the elevator speech on its head, because Diane Keaton said, when she was asked her most important lesson learned in the last 30 years, she said, "It's not about you. It never was." And most elevator speeches are about us, right? So let's flip that, George. What if instead of telling you what I do, which is a speech, a one-way monologue lecture, what if I asked questions? What if I said, "Do you know anyone, could be yourself, a friend or a family member, who wants to write a book?" You know, and then I stopped talking, George, because chances are you would say, "Oh yeah, I've been working on a book for years." Or, "Oh, my best friend is just..." And then I listen to what you say, and then I link what I do to what you just said. Now, what happens is your eyebrows go up, because if you, well, let's do this right now. So, do you know anyone, could be yourself, a friend, a family member, who's always wanted to write a book? Back to you.
Well, interesting. Yes, certainly myself, that's an ongoing desire. But it's funny that you mention that, because I know of an individual who's recently retired after 37 years in the industry, and he's dying to do something useful right now.
Then what I'll do, George, is I will come back and we'll go deeper into your friend, right? Because you just brought up your friend who just retired, who's wanted to do this for decades. Do you see how rude it is if I just yank the conversational carpet out from underneath you and say, "Oh, well, that's what I do. I help people." You almost feel like it's a bait and switch, right? So see, once you say something that you're passionate about, that's meaningful to you, that you care about, I would ask another question because I genuinely want to know, oh, what does he want to write about? Oh, does he have a working title? Has he started? So I'm going to do that right now. I'm going to come back to you and ask a little bit more about your friend and tell me a little bit more about the book that he wants to write.
Well, I think he's still in the early stage. I don't think he has a title yet, but he's developed a retail organization and trained staff and built teams. So I think it would be more about the team building and creating that staff that feel that they have responsibility and a commitment to the organization because the organization cares about them.
So see, you're bringing up team and all these lessons learned about how to build a team, how not to build a team, et cetera. So see, I am genuinely curious and engaged, and I want to know more. And George, if you and I were actually at an event, you know me, I would have my notebook handy. I would grab my pen, I would put a vertical line down the center, and then I would start saying, okay, so what are some of the lessons learned about how to build a team? You know, what sabotages a team? What supports a team? What compromises a team? What contributes to a team? I would be taking notes and see, just feel the difference, George. We are in a two-way mutually rewarding conversation. I did not deliver a speech where you went, oh, end of conversation. And now we're into small talk and it feels stilted and awkward and fake and false and so forth. We are genuinely having a meaningful conversation. And at the end, even if like we get pulled away for the program or something like that, you would say, Sam, can I have those notes? I got to give them to my friend, you know, or you would say something like, well, what are his next steps? Or, well, how can he come up with a title or something? And at that point, I would say, well, if you're interested, there's this upcoming masterclass, or if you're interested, tell him to write down the 10 things he heard most while he was building teams. And maybe one of those is going to be the title. Do you see how we are having a genuine interaction? We are not, you know, telling people something we've scripted to death that falls flat and that feels false.
You're right. It does feel better. And I get the feeling, and I would get the feeling that you're actually interested in me, my issue, my friend, his challenge. So that means that I most likely would want to talk with you more. And it's the beginning of a relationship.
That's why Jeff Bezos said the only danger is not to evolve. And I really think it's time to evolve the way we give these elevator speeches, because whether it's at a PTA meeting or at a conference or a virtual Zoom call, people are going to say, what do you do? And most of us have been taught to tell people what we do. And once again, that's infobesity, not a good way to start a conversation. So can I give you one of my favorite examples about the shift that this does?
You bet. Go ahead.
I had the privilege of speaking at Inc. 500. So this is Jim Collins and Tim Ferriss and Tom Peters, Seth Godin, they were all there. And actually this session on how to turn an elevator speech into an elevator question was the highest ranked session. Now we had 500 of the top entrepreneurs in the country in the room. So we were brainstorming, strategizing this in the room. And so I asked Colleen, who is Entrepreneur of the Year for the state of Oklahoma, I said, so what do you do? And it was wah, 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 wah. At the end of 30 seconds, no one in the room had any idea what she did, George. And she was the CEO of the company. So I said, can we play with that? And I said, what do you do that we can see or smell or taste or touch? Because see, we want to make this real life, right? We want to ask a question that increases the likelihood people will have experienced it or benefited or tried it or bought it or at least can picture it, right? Because now we've switched from something conceptual to something concrete. So she said, I run the medical centers that offer MRIs and CAT scans. I said, that's great. I said, don't tell people that. She said, don't tell people that. I said, because if someone says, what do you do? And you say, I run the medical centers that offer MRIs and CAT scans. They go, oh, and that's the end of the conversation. And George, as you and I just did, we don't want to end the conversation. We want to open the conversation. So turn it into a three-part question. Do you know anyone? And now, by the way, the reason these three-part question is so important, because if I just say, have you ever had an MRI or CAT scan? And you say no, end the conversation again, right? So when we give three options, we increase the likelihood that people, even if they've never done it themselves, they will know someone who has, and we still have a meaningful conversation, right?
Right.
So if I said, do you know anyone, could be yourself, someone in your neighborhood or at work who has had an MRI or a CAT scan. And once again, I put a sock in it because one of the goals of this is for me to stop talking after like 10 seconds so that we get this exchange instead of this lecture. And she may say, oh yeah, my daughter hurt her knee playing soccer. She had an MRI. Oh, well, I run, you know, the medical centers that offer MRIs like the one your daughter had when she hurt her knee playing soccer. Guess what happened? The eyebrows go, oh, they get what we do. They understand it. They relate to it. Now we can go on about, is her daughter's knee better? Is she playing soccer again, et cetera? And we're off and running. And that's the whole point of an elevator question instead of an elevator speech, is to launch this mutually meaningful conversation.
So do you know anyone? Do you know anyone who? And then fill in the end of that question with what your service or product provides without necessarily naming the product or service.
It can be, so George, let's talk about you. Let's do it in the virtual room right now, right?
Let's do that, yes.
Okay, so first I would ask, because see, we don't script this. It really is tailored to the group. If I'm in a room of CEOs, I would say something different than if I was in the room of teachers or stay-at-home moms, right?
Right, yeah.
So put me in the scene of a group, maybe a virtual meeting or something that you're going to be doing, and then we'll customize it in the spot to increase the likelihood people will relate to what you're saying and will really warm up to it and you. So what's the situation coming up where you're going to be giving an elevator introduction?
There's not that many these days. Normally there would be something. A meeting of what's going to happen at some point is a group of local company leaders getting together for a networking.
Okay.
Listening to a luncheon speaker and then sitting around a lunch table and going, oh, so what do you do?
Okay. See, George, I love this because a lot of times people say, well, Sam, okay, that works face to face. Does that work in writing as well? Does that work like in a virtual presentation? Absolutely. Let's switch gears now. Let's take what we just said. And if you're going to write the copy for this podcast or webinar, how would you write the copy? Not by telling them what it's about, right? Because that's one-way communication. I'm telling people and they're sitting there with their arms crossed, you know, and they feel kind of almost like they're being held hostage. If instead I start with, have you ever, walked into a room and not known what to say? You know, introduced yourself and could tell they didn't know what you did. You know, floundered for how to describe your very complex or complicated work. So do you see how we would ask three questions that put people in the scene of the problem that we're solving or the issue that we're addressing? And the whole goal is for them to say, yes, I've had that happen. Just happened yesterday. Or, well, I haven't had that happen. And, you know, my customer, you know, I run a business and I've kind of got this down. However, I've got some new hires and I overheard one of them the other day and how they described us is like not even close to what we do. So do you see how even on the page or on the screen, we have already created a meaningful dialogue with someone because we've asked these questions that are relevant to them and having them say, yep, that's happened to me, and we're off and running.
Sam, I want to be clear. You said three questions. Did you mean the one question with the three parts to it? Have you ever, or do you know anyone who has ever, you or someone you know, is that what you mean by the three?
We have lots of variations on this because I don't believe in scripts, say this every single time. So the answer to your question, if it's in person, we often say something like, do you know anyone? Three, could be yourself, a friend or a family member. There's three parts there. Guess what, George? Sometimes we also give three examples to increase the likelihood they relate to what we're saying. I'll give you a quick example of this. I'm speaking at YPO and I'm speaking on this topic and a gentleman pulled me aside beforehand and he said, I'm going to tell you something I don't tell many people. He said, I run a tech company in Silicon Valley. He said, I'm an introvert. He said, I'm kind of shy. He said, I just flew across a continent and an ocean to get here. This was in Ireland. And he said, and I'm probably going to be hanging out in my hotel room a lot because I hate, cocktail parties and receptions and small talk. And he said, and what I do is so complicated, I can never explain it so people get it anyway. And I asked him, do you want to play? And he said, sure. I said, okay, now do not try and explain your company, your platform, your SAS. No, just ask yourself, just start telling me, like, what do you do that I can see that I've actually touched or used before? And he said something about credit cards and computers and financial software. And my light bulb went off, George. I said, do you make the software that makes it safe for us to buy things online? He said, yes. I said, now don't tell people that. I said, do you want to increase the likelihood they'll relate to what you say? He said, yeah. I said, what are the three biggest online retailers right now? Well, it was Amazon, eBay, and Travelocity. So do you know anyone? Here's your two, three parts. Do you know anyone? Could be yourself, a friend, or family member who buys things online, like on eBay, Travelocity, or Amazon? Stop talking. Do you see how we have just seeded an answer that they can jump on? Oh yeah, I hate that stuff. My wife's on Amazon all the time. She loves the free shipping. Oh, I make the software that makes it safe for your wife to buy stuff on Amazon. Oh, and it's all under 60 seconds. Both people have talked. We have something in common. And when we have something in common, we have a conversation.
And what I just noticed is that when you said, do you know anybody who has bought online from Amazon, eBay, or Travelocity, those are specific names that I can relate to and I can see, which works better than if the question was simply, do you know anybody who buys online? Now I'm no, I can't think of any. But now you gave specific pictures of places to buy. And yeah, I see the logo. I see the store. Yeah, I've been on there. Yeah. So now you gave people an easy choice to say yes.
George, you're quick. I call this turning the vague into the visual, right? Because like you say, if we meet someone online, who knows? They could have been on Zoom calls for 4 hours that day, right? They're kind of distracted. They're preoccupied. They're not really there. And if we ask a vague or sweeping question like that, do you ever buy stuff online? It's like, it's almost like an eye roller. It doesn't feel real, does it? If we give people three specific things rather than these sweeping generalities, then it plants that seed. As you said, they see it. And by the way, George, do you know what people say when all of a sudden something confusing becomes crystal clear?
Oh, I get it.
I see now, right?
Yes, yeah.
Because all of a sudden something that was kind of swirling around in their head became picture perfect. Became crystal clear. They see it. And that's the beauty of in an elevator intro. Can I give a one of my favorite examples about this, George?
Please do.
Okay. Well, my son started a nonprofit when he graduated from Virginia Tech. So guess what? When people said, well, what do you do? Guess what he said?
He works for a nonprofit.
There you go. End of conversation, right? So then he said, do you know anyone, could be yourself or a family member or someone at work, who has a child with a special need, power of three, like autism or CP or ADHD? And people would say, oh yes, my nephew, you know, was diagnosed with autism or something like that. And he would say, well, we help kids like your nephew get off the sidelines and into the games of life. Now, would you know the next wonderful thing to say? Two words, for example. And you go immediately into, and now I love this story. So in 60 seconds, it's, I believe, in 60 second stories. You know, if we're long, they're gone. So 60 seconds. So there was a young man named Jerry with CP who had really spiraled into depression, was very isolated and depressed, and got involved in his nonprofit, Dreams for Kids, DC. They put on a mudder out at Great Falls where these kids were actually climbing, and you know, they assigned a host to every kid. When in this like half mile race, everyone was there except for Jerry. And so they sent a group out to find out Jerry. And I'm not telling this as well as Andrew does now. It's just that they found him a couple hundred yards down the trail. And he was struggling at that point with his crutches to make it up this hill. And just as he comes up over the rise, everyone starts chanting, Jerry, 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 Jerry. A local news TV rolled up in their remote van. Leon Harris, one of the famous broadcasters in Washington, D.C., tumbled out the camera just as everyone's saying, Jerry, Jerry, crosses the finish line. Leon Harris sticks a mic under his face and says, how do you feel? And you know what Jerry said? I'm a winner. And you know, it's true, George, you're not making this up. This is what is. He doesn't just run a nonprofit. He helps kids like Jerry feel like winners. You know, it's a true story. And it can all be under 90 seconds. Who doesn't know a child with special needs? Who wouldn't want them to feel like winners? Who wouldn't want them to be engaged in activities where people are supporting them and cheering them on? And at the end, people say, boy, what's your website? I've got to, you know, tell my brother about this. It's like, you know, it's like, how can, when's your next activity? And you see, once again, it sets in motion this mutually meaningful conversation instead of giving an elevator speech.
That story was powerful because it was about a specific person with a specific challenge. And so now we could see that person, we could focus on that individual, as opposed to if it was just, well, we help people who have disabilities, which sounds vague and doesn't pull us in. And when you were saying that, I was emotionally in that moment of seeing this Jerry rise to the top of the hill and move across the finish line, probably throwing his arms in the air, throwing the crutches down, and just in ecstasy. So that's powerful. So do we look for stories like that about our clients, of how we helped our clients?
Well, the answer to that would be yes, George, because that's what's called an empathy telescope example. Now, let me tell you, because there is an art and a craft and a skill to this. I was reading the Washington Post years ago, and Shankar Vedantam wrote about this oil tanker that caught fire 800 miles off the coast of Hawaii. And now a cruise ship happened to be going by, and they rescued the captain and the 11 crew members. And then he gave a press conference, and he said he was very grateful to be rescued. All he can think about is his dog that got left behind on the tanker. That press conference went viral, and donations started pouring in from around the world, $5, $500, $5,000. They actually change the exercise area of the Pacific Fleet to search for the tanker. They found it. They sent a C-140 to fly low to see if there's any signs of life. Here's this brown and white blur racing up and down the deck of the tanker. They mount $250,000 rescue mission to get that dog, and they're able to rescue him. Now, if you're thinking, Sam, why would people from around the world mobilize to save one dog? It is because of something called the Empathy Telescope. And just as you brought up, George, the Empathy Telescope says we can put our shoes in one person. We cannot in many. We can relate to an individual or a dog. We cannot relate to an idea or an organization. So you're right. When we talk about millions of people are suffering from this, when we're talking about I've helped thousands of people from around the world, the people thinking, I can't relate to that because I can't put myself in the shoes of that individual. So I hope everyone watching this starts collecting their client stories. And they have this little hero journey arc. This individual came to me and they didn't know how to do this. They were worried about this. They were struggling with their health, you know, that they couldn't do this. Now you skip over the middle because that's where a story bogs down and we don't get it in 60 seconds. Elmore Leonard was one of our favorite keynoters at Maui Writers Conference. And I remember someone in the audience put his hand up in the Q&A and said, you know, Mr. Leonard, people love your books. Why do people love your writing so much? And do you know what he said?
Please tell us.
I try to leave out the parts people skip. So skip the middle, right? And then say, and then following, you know, our 6-week course or at the end of reading that book or after 3 months of working together, he called me and said, he walked into my office and told me, she emailed me. And you see how one story and people are thinking, I want what they're having. And it was because we used the empathy telescope of one true proof of concept story instead of talking about the thousands of people dealing with this.
That's insightful. I got to let that sink in because it is insightful. We need to see one person, one individual. If we see disaster and you know the numbers, it say hundreds or thousands, we can't relate to that. But if there's one person, one child, one dog with a name that we can relate to, then it tugs at us.
What is empathy? Empathy in four words is how would I feel? How would I feel if this were happening to me? How would I feel if I were in that situation? And that's the power of using the example of one individual is that we can identify with that instead of being overwhelmed or mobilized by it. Now, George, I had said that there are, this is a banquet of ideas, a buffet, right? It's not just one idea all the time in every situation. So how about an example where we actually do use numbers, like if we're trying to get funding for a project and we're trying to impress upon a decision maker that many people are being impacted by this, that's actually our goal. Well, then we actually can use numbers. Shall I give you an example of how to do that?
Go ahead.
Okay, so I think you may know that I have been the pitch coach for Springboard Enterprises, which has helped women generate like $10 billion in funding. So Kathleen Callender came to me and she said, Sam, I got good news and I got bad news. I said, well, what's the good news? And she said, I'm speaking in front of a group of investors at the Paley Center in New York. And I said, that's great news. I said, everyone there is going to have the money and the budget to financially invest in you. She said, that's right. I said, what's the bad news? And she said, I'm going at 2:30 in the afternoon and I only have 10 minutes. She said, Sam, there's no way that I can get across what I do in 10 minutes. Our competitive edge and our patents that are pending and our team credentials and our exit strategy. I said, Kathleen, you don't have 10 minutes, you have 60 seconds. They will have listened to 16 presentations already. Their eyes are gonna be glazed unless you have them at hello. Well, here is the 60 second opening. It not only won her millions in funding, She was Business Week's most promising social entrepreneur of that year. So here we go. Ready?
Go.
Did you know there are 1.8 billion vaccinations given every year? Did you know up to a third of those are given with reused needles? Did you know we're spreading and perpetuating the very diseases we're trying to prevent? Imagine if there were a painless one-use needle for a fraction of the current cost. You don't have to imagine it. We've created it, in fact. And then you bring up an article, then you bring up a quote from a respected thought leader, etc. Now, are your eyebrows up, George? Yeah. Do you know how Kathleen used to start her PowerPoint deck, used to start her pitch, used to by explaining and telling that PharmaJet was a medical delivery device for subcutaneous inoculations? Now look what happens. Do you see how my eyebrows are crunched up? That's because I don't get it. It's because I'm confused, and confused people don't say yes.
Another powerful insight. Confused people don't say yes. And too many times we talk and we assume that people know what we know, that they understand us, that they think the same way. And then we wonder why they don't get it. Well, I told them everything I know. They don't want to know everything you know. You just have to make that connection. That's powerful. Sam, before we wrap up, I want to mention to people that for those who want to learn more about this, you're having a masterclass starting in January. And the purpose of the and for those who attend the masterclass, what will they get from that?
Do you know anyone you know, who is finding it challenging to pivot their business in these times of COVID and switching to virtual and things like that? And do you know anyone who would like to pop out of their pack and would like to break out instead of blend in, because blending in is for Cuisinarts? And do you know anyone who would like to figure out, what's my secret sauce? What's my competitive edge? How am I one of a kind instead of one of many? So they really do get noticed by their ideal clients, or people really are intrigued and engaged and want to register for their program or want to read their book or check out their website. Well, that's what we do in the POP class, is that we hit the ground running. We have POP seats. So right in the virtual room, people have an opportunity to brainstorm and strategize their priority and come up with a positioning or messaging or a repeatable, retweetable tagline for it that helps it stand out from its crowd instead of get lost in its crowd.
Powerful lessons that one needs to learn, especially in these times where it's either thrive or die for your business or career. So great opportunity. And I understand that Sam, you've made a special offer for listeners and viewers of the podcast. For those who register at your website, the website is intrigueagency.com/POP masterclass. And I'll put that link in the description for the podcast. Just look in the description. You'll find it there. And mention my name when you register. Mention George Torok, and you will get $100 off the registration. $100 just for listening and saying you listened, that you heard it here, folks. Sam, one last message from you. You've started the conversation. You've grabbed their attention. How do you move away? How do you close it? How do you leave it? How do you move away from that conversation and still leave the idea open that we need to talk again?
What a thoughtful question, George. It makes me think of the line that Bette Midler said in the movie Wing. She said, "Enough about me. What do you think about me?" Is that how we wrap up, is to do what's called bookending. I think, you know, I started and helped run the Maui Writers Conference for 17 years. And authors and good speakers know that when you end with something you opened with, people feel they've come full circle. It's a very satisfying kind of closure and forward. So at the end, I would say, I'm so glad to hear that your daughter's knee is better and she's back to playing soccer. Or I really hope that your wife, you know, enjoys this buying things on. So I would bookend it. And if we've made a promise, you know, and let me know if you'd like me to send you that article, or let me know if you would like me to get in touch with your brother and your nephew to find out about our next activity, is that we plant an action that references something they said. So instead of just once again pulling the conversational carpet out from underneath them, that it feels this, that we really have listened, that we really have imprinted what they've said and care about it, and that it is the magic carpet that is going to move us both forward.
Magic carpet. My guest today is Sam Horn, helping you have them at Hello.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.